Welcome to Life Study of the Bible with Witness Lee, a program provided by Living Stream Ministry and featuring the ministry of Watchman Nee and Witness Lee. Witness Lee, a servant of the Lord for over 7 decades on 5 continents, culminated his ministry with a 21-year, book-by-book exposition of the entire Bible, which he called a life study. And we're delighted to bring you short portions of this spoken ministry on today's broadcast. Now, let's join today's life study.
No other book brings us such depth of understanding to this very central item in God's eternal purpose. Bob Danker has joined us again as we continue our fellowship in Ephesians. Bob, welcome back.
It's good to be back, Chris. This book, Ephesians, is a tremendous book to reveal to us what the church is in at least 7 aspects, and all these aspects are truly marvelous.
Yeah, I just mentioned a couple of sort of the highlights, some of the ones we're going to touch today again. Again, a kind of a review message in some ways. We'll touch some elements that we haven't. We're really headed toward chapter 6, but we're going to drop back a little bit to chapter 4, where we saw the church as the new man, and then chapter 5, of course, the first segment of our program today, we're going to come again to this matter of the bride. Bob, in chapter 4, the new man, the church seen there really with an emphasis on truth and grace in chapter 5, those are now, I hate to say replaced, maybe you could help us with love and light as we see the church as the bride.
Well, this is because, Chris, as you mentioned, the church has more than one aspect. In chapter 4, the new man is mentioned, and all of this is in the context of the living that the church should have. Now, the church should live as the new man. And for this kind of living, the church should live according to the truth and by God's grace. So the two main elements are truth and grace. But then in chapter 5, we see another aspect of the church, and that is the church as the bride of Christ. And here, in relation to Christ as her husband, the church should live in love and in light. These are the two main factors for the church's living as the bride of Christ.
Well, Bob, we're going to delve into this matter of the church as the bride in the connection with love and light. Let's just look at a verse we've touched several times now in this portion of life studies from Ephesians, again in chapter 5, just for the sake of anyone joining us. We have that long discourse in chapter 5 that is always used at the weddings about the proper relationship between husbands and wives. And then Paul speaks this marvelous verse at the conclusion of it, "For this mystery is great, but I speak with regard to Christ and the church, a husband and wife." So let's join Witness Lee as we again look at this part of chapter 5.
Chapter 5 deals with the church as the bride, for the church to be the new man. The church needs the truth and grace, but for the church to be the bride, the church needs something finer, deeper, more intimate. So love and light is here. Love and light are not for the church to be a man, but for the church to be what? To be a wife. In our marriage life, we know if the wife, the husband live together merely by grace, that would be terrible. The marriage life is not based upon grace. Am I right? It's based upon love. Again, I say, if the marriage life is based upon truth, that would be terrible. Your husband shouldn't do this to your wife because this is not right. You must do everything according to the truth. I tell you, truth is a good term, but if the wife and husband live together according to truth, that's terrible. Just truth is not adequate. It has to be light. When you are in light, you are out of the field of being right or being wrong. In the realm of light, there's nothing as right or wrong. Could you follow me? When you are in darkness, you need to guess, you need to grope which way is right, which way is wrong, what you should do, what you should not do. I tell you, when you are under the full light, you don't need anything. You are just in light. You need to consider whether you lose your temper or you don't lose your temper. Am I right? You are absolutely light. Could you see this?
Bob, his fellowship here touched me in a couple of areas. On a very initial level, I think the analogy of a husband and wife is very good to see the importance of love as the basis of the relationship portrayed in chapter 5. Now, when he touches the matter of light here, there was some real light in his word on light, wasn't there?
There really was. It's rather easy to see that for a marriage, you need love, love between the husband and the wife. But for a husband and a wife to live together in light, this is really something quite deep and fine. For us to live together according to truth, we just do what is right and what is wrong according to the truth. But if you try to relate yourself to your spouse just according to the truth, never doing anything wrong, always trying to do everything right, always trying to behave according to some standard of truth,
right,
then what kind of relationship would you have with your spouse? It really wouldn't be what it should be. We need to live together in the marriage life, not only with the Lord, but with our spouse in the realm of light. And this is a higher realm. If we are in the light, we don't have to ask what's right and what's wrong, or what's according to the truth or what's not according to the truth. We are just in the light. We know where we are because we see. We have light. We have sight. We know where we are. We know where we should be. We know what we should do, what we should say, because we're in the light. It's not a matter of right and wrong. It's not a matter of whether it's according to the truth or not. It's a matter of light versus darkness. If we're in the darkness, then we grope. We try to find a way to do things in a right way. But if we're in the light, we see everything, and everything is clear to us.
Bob, you know, we're kind of headed for chapter 6, but we are here in chapter 5 for a moment. Now we're going to actually detour back to chapter 4. As we begin to see a wonderful progression or development of this in these aspects of the church, in chapter 4, it's not the bride of Christ, it's the new man, even a full-grown man, in verse 13 of chapter 4, until we all arrive at the oneness of the faith and of the full knowledge of the Son of God at a full-grown man, the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. And then the progression continues to the bride and ultimately where we're headed, chapter 6, in the coming days, the warrior. Let's go back to Witness Lee.
The church has become a full-grown man in chapter 4, right? And we have to know, to fulfill God's eternal purpose, there's a need of such an universal man. That is the new man. So in this aspect, the new man is the highest point of what the church is. You see, from assembly to a kind of family or house or commonwealth or kingdom, then go up to a body, and then it reaches the full growth to be the full grown man to fulfill God's eternal purpose. A man is for doing things. A man is for fulfilling something. This is already completed. Yet, there is the longing, the desire within Christ, the need to be satisfied. Not only so, there is still the need, the defeat of the enemy. Yeah, here's a man, full grown, to fulfill God's eternal purpose, no doubt. But how about the longing heart of Christ? What is going to satisfy that? And how about God's enemy? So you see, you have these two additional chapters. One is chapter 5 on the bride for the satisfaction of Christ's longing heart. As such a bride, what is needed is not truth, not grace, but love and light. So you have the bride here in love and in light. Then after this satisfaction, still the enemy exists. Then the church is now the fighting one. to defeat God's enemy, to settle the problem in the whole universe. I feel this is the arrangement of the whole book.
One of those bird's eye view portions of the ministry of Witness Lee that we got to look forward to so much in the days when he was still with us. But as we're mentioning this progression, Bob, to move from the assembly on up through chapter 4 in The New Man, probably for our sake, we could have ended the book of Ephesians right here. Seems that at this point, all of our problems have been resolved as the new man. This is really the highest. That means it's not only has the life of God, but the church in that stage is living the life and person of Christ. But there's a couple of other needs that are still with us, aren't there?
That's right, Chris. And this brings us back to the beginning of our broadcast in Ephesians, to realize that the church in Ephesians is revealed not from man's perspective, but from God's point of view. So as we trace the different aspects of the church that are revealed in this book, starting with the body in chapter 1, then going on to the household and the kingdom, the house of God in chapter 2, and then the fullness of God, the body again, the new man. This is all from God's point of view. Every aspect of the church meets some need that God has or a desire in his heart. So the revelation of the church in Ephesians is from the heart of God, not from our point of view. So from God's point of view, merely to have the church as the full-grown new man is not sufficient. It fulfills God's purpose to obtain a corporate man to be his expression. We found this in Genesis chapter 1. God created man, a corporate man. He wants a corporate man to express him. But this is only one of the aspects of the church and only one of the desires in God's heart. There's more. There's also Christ's longing for a counterpart, for a mate, a helpmate, a wife to satisfy his heart. This is also revealed in Genesis chapter 2 when you have the creation of Eve. This is the aspect of the church as the wife. And then you have God's enemy. Somehow God's enemy has to be defeated.
That's right.
And he has to be removed and put away. Who will do this? The church must do this. The church as the warrior. So you see all the aspects of the church revealed in Ephesians satisfy some desire in God's heart or meet some need that God has. So you need the church in all these different aspects.
I think, Bob, for a lot of people, the realization of the church as the body of Christ, it becomes a very pinnacle, a very high point for many in their understanding of the church. I think, you know, obviously from the initial misconception of relating it to the building, and then to have the realization, no, you know, the church in its deeper context is the body of Christ. That is an astounding revelation for many, many people, and one that I think is more popular today. But these other aspects that we've now touched, particularly the new man, the bride, and the warrior, there's a lot of ground yet to cover in the appreciation and realization of most of the believers, isn't there?
Yes, there is, Chris. And these higher and deeper aspects of the church are really what we need to see. We need the revelation of the church in its higher and deeper aspects. It's very easy to see that the church is a congregation of believers. That's relatively elementary. But to see that the church is actually an organism, a body to express Christ, a man, a corporate man.
With Christ as the head.
With Christ as the head and Christ as every member, you know, and to see that the church is a bride, to satisfy the longing in Christ's heart for a loving mate or loving counterpart.
And really not until the church has progressed to this stage is it now qualified or able to function in this final capacity as the corporate warrior.
That's exactly right. It really fits very well the actual sequence. Once the church as the bride is produced, for instance, we see in Revelation, the wedding of the Lamb, the marriage of the Lamb comes in Revelation 19, right after the wedding. The Lamb, who's the husband, and his wife, who is his army, they come down to the earth to fight a war with Antichrist and his armies at Armageddon. This is for the dealing with God's enemy, to defeat Satan as the enemy of God. You see, the wife is the warrior. After the wife is produced, after the marriage takes place, then the battle happens between Christ and his bride and Antichrist and his followers.
We're going to come to chapter 6 now in this last section. In many cases, the book of Ephesians is treated as a book with strong ethical teachings, and that is the context many times people talk about the husband-wife relationships, and that extends now as chapter 6 begins. But reminding all of our listeners and ourselves, this is a life study. We're going to see this portion at the beginning of chapter 6 in a much deeper view in this coming segment. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Let's go back to Witness Lee.
Verse 1, obey your parents in the Lord. This means the children of the believers should realize in obeying their parents, they should be one with the Lord. And also in the Lord means not to obey the parents by yourself, by your own strength, but by the Lord. In the Lord, I do believe, implies according to the Lord's word. So, you young ones, obeying your parents, you have to do it as one with the Lord, by the Lord, and according to what the Lord teaches you. Here, Paul quotes the fifth of the Ten Commandments. Paul quotes here, honor your father and mother. And this commandment, Paul says, is the first commandment with a promise. The promise is mainly from Deuteronomy 5:16, that it may be well with you. This means you will have the prosperity in the material things, and that you may live long on the earth. These all are blessings in this age. Well, to obey is one thing. To honor is another thing. To obey is kind of an action. To honor is a kind of an attitude. You may obey your parents without honoring them. See, so you need an attitude, a spirit, to honor your parents. You have to learn to obey with honor. Now, verse 4, and the fathers. So firstly, the children, and now the fathers. Do not provoke your children to anger. This is not so easy. To be angry with the children only destroys. It doesn't build up. So, parents, don't be angry with your children. Don't lose temper with your children. But how could we not lose our temper? I tell you, the only one that can be able not to lose the temper is the one remaining on the cross. When your children do something wrong, don't say anything, don't do anything. You must be on the cross. Remain on the cross. Otherwise, you will just be mad, be angry, you will lose your temper to provoke their anger, regardless how wrong they would be. Don't lose your temper. Don't say anything. But go to the cross there and stay there. While you are remaining there, you say something. That will not provoke them.
Well, Bob, a lot of preaching goes on related to these kind of verses, and as a parent of some years and as a husband of some years, I think many of us have become experts in proving how ineffective these words can be when they're just applied in an outward ethical manner. Children, honor your parents, obey your parents, and then for the parents, do not provoke your children to anger. It takes something more than just the ethical instruction, doesn't it, from the Bible?
It certainly does, Chris. I really appreciate Witness Lee pointing out to us here that we cannot do these things in ourselves. Out of our own natural goodness, we need Christ. We need to be one with the Lord. In order to obey your parents with honor, the children need to learn to be one with the Lord. So Paul tells them, obey your parents in the Lord. Right. Is you have to be in the Lord to do this in a way that is pleasing to God. And then for the parents not to provoke their children, not to be angry and lose their temper with their children, this must be a very difficult thing, especially when the children misbehave in a way that touches you in a deep way. It's very difficult. And the only way we can not lose our temper is to be crossed out, to be crucified, to remain on the cross. But this is the Christian life. Our whole Christian life needs to be lived in union with the Lord and in the reality of His death and resurrection. But how can we be persons on the cross? Well, we have to pray. We have to turn to our spirit where the Lord is. With Him, there is the life, the light, the love, and there is the killing cross that terminates our anger and all the negative things within us. This is a marvelous thing. It shows us how much we need the Lord and to be one with Him.
And to see marvelously that the Lord's presence incorporates the cross of Christ. When we're remaining in His presence, we really are remaining on the cross, and the death is being applied as the life is flowing in, isn't it?
Absolutely, Chris. This is the marvelous reality. We have this wonderful Christ who is the life-giving Spirit in our spirit.
A great point of fellowship to have arrived at the conclusion, and we'll have to leave it there. We're out of time, but as always, I've enjoyed a wonderful life study. Wouldn't you agree?
I absolutely agree.
For Bob Danker today, I'm Chris Wilde. Thank you very much for listening.